Hey there, this is Everett, producer of The Scalpel. And in this episode, Dr. Rose joins Charlie Kirk, the CEO and founder of Turning Point USA and the host of The Charlie Kirk Show. Dr. Rose is lending his formidable foreign intelligence background to an in-depth discussion of how Democrats are employing coercion and propaganda to force the appearance of overwhelming popular support for their platform, when in reality, it's nothing more than an illusion and couldn't be further from the truth. And make sure you check the show notes for important information, including a link to the book by Rod Dreher, Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents, and a book that, in these times, need to be reading. Here we go.
The Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
Cutting down to the truth through history and experience. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge. Email kfr@scalpeledge.com or the website scalpeledge.com.
The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. With us today is a dear friend of mine, a great strategic thinker, someone we've had on before for a variety of different topics. He has his own podcast called The Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. Keith, welcome back to The Charlie Kirk Show.
Thanks, Charlie. It's good to be here.
I want to pick it up just right where you were, and we'll let the audience catch up. You said what makes our country different than most countries that have gone into socialism is we have a productive class, or we have a production kind of infrastructure built. Just pick it up right there.
Sure, Charlie. When socialism comes in, basically we're talking about totalitarianism. We're a complete takeover. And the way that has typically been done, and I know you're a big Solzhenitsyn fan like I am, throughout history, is it's been done through coercion. And it's been done through a lot of force. But in this country, it's being done. We have a soft totalitarianism that is moving in through the culture. They're not taking over the means of production as much as they're taking over the means of culture and canceling people. And we've seen that.
That's such a good
point.
But
what I don't think people are understanding is that the MAGA movement, which your book talks about actually, is so important, is the movement. I think President Trump did a wonderful job, but he had something that very few presidents in history have ever had. I think George Washington had it, and I'm not sure a whole lot of others. He had trust. He had the consent of the governed. So while we have a new administration coming in, there's a lot of distrust, and they don't have the consent of the governed. And it's not just any governed. We have 74 to 80 million people, which I would just call the productive class. These are the folks with jobs. These are your small business entrepreneurs. Some of these are large company owners. When I say large company, maybe 200 to 500 to 1,000 employees, several hundred million dollar companies. We have several billionaires in this class. We have people that are extremely motivated, that have benefited from the freedoms that we have in this nation, and that still recognize that we have benefited from them, that we have become successful because of the country we live in. And I think President Trump tapped into that vein. And when what happened during the election, and I was talking to a dear friend of mine and yours, Bob McEwen.
He's the best.
And Bob, who I call one of my wise men, I know you do too. I mean, him and Rob McCoy, we're blessed in life. Mm-hmm. But what we are seeing is you have a small dog with a very big bark. And what I mean by that is you have the progressive elites that aren't the majority, and they certainly aren't the majority of the production class. You and I both know from doing an analysis on the election that President Trump got record number of Latinos of African-American votes. I think he got record number of Democrat crossover votes because we're at a point in history where we're no longer viewing other people as, are you a Democrat or are
That's
you a Republican?
Exactly right.
When I was, you know, I was real involved in the Reagan revolution. That was not my first time to where I remember how everything went. There was really the Democrat and Republicans all had the same overriding goals. And that was, we loved America. We were patriotic. We believed in a strong military. We believed in law enforcement. We believed in protecting our borders. Both groups did. What we did, what we disagreed on were some of the social issues and ways to get to that success. And I think that what's happened over several years of Bush, Clinton, Obama, is that we've had radical elements within the left completely hijack the party, while simultaneously watching the Republican Party fall to what I think George Washington summed up the best is to ambition and avarice.
Yeah.
To where they were more focused on keeping and maintaining power within a small realm than seeing the needs of, you know, we the people. And so President Trump came in and no one thought he was going to win because he was focused on the govern. He got the consent of the govern. No one saw that coming. And I believe it's gotten stronger, to sum it up, not weaker.
So I love your framing of the productive class. And then we have the ruling class. And then we kind of have the government dependent class. And the ruling class has decided that they want to rule by convincing people that are in upper middle class suburbia and perpetually on government handouts. And it's almost hollowed out this productive class, which really was the MAGA movement, which are people that work with their hands, they're business owners, they're people that put a little capital into the marketplace. And there are some people that are very successful that would be part of the productive class. Would you loop in the Silicon Valley tech elites into the productive class? Because I don't know if I would. They philosophically...
No, absolutely not.
Can you help make that distinction?
Absolutely. And the interesting thing we have, Charlie, is I don't think we've become weaker. I think we've become stronger because of the Silicon Valley elite's actions. You don't try to stifle or take away the voice of an entire group of people unless you fear them and you know that their arguments and their debate pierces your ideology.
Such a good point.
They can't compete in the realm, in the arena of ideas. The left is petrified that someone like a Charlie Kirk or Candace Owens is going to go to a campus. They have to shout you down. They can't let you speak because, as our friend Dennis Prager said, they can't have a speak because it's truth, and truth just pops there. It dissolves their ideology and their bubble. They can't even stand up to the words. And I think that we know how strong we are with how completely they're trying to silence us. If we weren't silent, I don't think Facebook and Twitter would have lost $5.6 billion in market cap overnight. I mean, literally not being holding their fiduciary duties to their shareholders by obfuscating that just so they could silence the truth. I look at it as I played football in college. And so I look at it as a sports game. What can you imagine going to the Super Bowl coming up and one team knows that the other team would destroy them? So instead of playing them, they weld their doors shut of the locker room. They don't even let them take the field. And they run out there in front of the stadium and they say, we're the best. They're afraid to even play us. And then the stadium looks and goes, these guys are texting us. They're locked in their locker room. They're not letting them talk. And they're like, we're the best. And anyone that dissents, they kick them out of the stadium because they say they're trying to incite violence. I mean, they have mortal fear, not of the kinetic side of the MAGA movement, but its ideas. And that's where the power is in this nation. And that's why they are trying to stifle free speech.
That's such a good point. And if you think about it, what sort of ideas are they trying to stifle? They're trying to stifle the ones that are actually very, very popular. They're not actually worried about some of the wackos out there that are saying things that are completely and totally untrue. It's the ideas that really have viral momentum. They're the ones that are rooted in truth. And even, you know, when Facebook was asked by a congressional committee, what sort of content is most popular on your platforms? And either Zuckerberg or one of the other guys said, you might be surprised, conservative populist content is the most popular content on social media. It always has been. And, you know, this is why some of our content has gone so viral over the years. This is why some people have been able to do, you know, so well in a variety of different ways, you know, through digital creation. You mentioned Candace Owens and other people as well. So, Keith, I want to get your take here of where do we go from here? What are the next steps now from where we are as a country?
Well, Charlie, just to your last point, I would simply sum it up, and Mark Zuckerberg and the social tech giants know this. Truth resonates. Slogans dissipate. And people don't so much follow a movement as they are mobilized by the truth. And we are now at a point in society where people have a real desire to understand what the truth is, because we have gone so far to the opposite mm-hmm. of truth. We've had pseudo events, as described by Mark Levin in his book on Freedom of the Press. And those pseudo events have given way to what I call a pseudo reality. And people see that and they know that. And there's a lot of cognitive dissonance in the populace going, wait, I hear what everyone's saying. And I hear the media repeating it over and over again, but I know it's not true. So they flock to anything where they can get a glimpse of the truth. It's almost like seeing a unicorn right now. Mm-hmm. That's what we're seeing. But where do we go from here? I think where we go from here is really quickly, and I think most of us have done this, we have to assess exactly where we are and how bad it is.
A damage report.
We have to be honest with ourselves. Yes. We need what we call, and when we were overseas, we called it a BDA, a battle damage report. And what we know and what has happened is we knew how bad the Democrats were. They told us. They've been very consistent in their actions. But what we've seen, and I think the thing that's giving a lot of people some indigestion, is we have seen the absolute failure of the establishment bulk Republican Party to the point of not only failure, but impediment to freedom. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is Solzhenitsyn, when he was exiled to the West, made a statement that I can't let go right now. And he told everyone when he was leaving Russia, he said, live not by lies.
That's so
he
true.
Said, you may not have the strength or the courage to speak the truth, but you have to have the conviction not to speak and promote a lie. And so what we're seeing right now is people that now haven't had the courage to say the truth, and they haven't had the conviction not to jump on the President Trump possibly incited a riot. And that's a lie. I don't know any other way to describe that. And you unpacked it in your podcast the other day brilliantly.
Thank you.
But he did not incite the riot. We know that from timelines, from people involved. And we can get into that if you want. But the bottom line is we have to recognize that the people that we have elected in the Republican Party to represent us has not only not represented us well, but have actually, by their actions and words, worked against us. And I consider inaction just as bad as action in the wrong direction. And they have allowed lies like Black Lives Matter Incorporated. People wanted to be a part of something, so they supported a lie and did not have their conviction. You didn't have to say what you felt the truth was, but you did not have to go along with the lie because that had ramifications. As Solzhenitsyn would say, you had people, corporations saw all these folks supporting Black Lives Matter through their black square on their Instagram and stuff. And all of a sudden they thought, well, we'll donate money to them. Mm. And when you donated money to Black Lives Matter Incorporated, it went straight to a group that's, by their own words, are avowed Marxists. It went to Act Blue to support the people the Republicans were running against. And so what I would tell your audience, which I understand is one of the largest now in the country, congratulations, thank brother, you, is don't live by lies. We have, that's the one thing. If you read Arndt, if you read Milosevic, you read all the famous social scientists that talked about totalitarianism, the bottom line was you can't live by lies. You have to speak the truth. Like George Orwell's 1984. I mean, he talked about this over and over again. And I believe I think it was Orwell, may have been Solzhenitsyn, said, well, you don't have to, you may not be able to sell the truth. In the kingdom of lies, you do not have to be its loyal subject. And I'm paraphrasing. Mm. And right now, people want healing. And a Democrat's word for healing is to compromise to their version of the truth, which I call a lie. And so they don't want healing. They want obedience blindly. And as a nation, maybe you can't speak the truth where you live or in your workplace, but you definitely don't have to go along with the big lie. And that's going to help.
You may not know this about me, but I'm really an undercover studier when it comes to the global economy. I love seeking out financial wisdom. And when it comes to my own portfolio, I value precious metals. Noble Gold is the firm I trust to buy gold and silver from, which can serve as a hedge of protection in your IRA. First reason, they are a U.S.-based company. Supporting American businesses is so important. Second reason, Noble Gold has impeccable online reviews. A great online reputation is as much if you're going to trust a team's financial counsel. Third reason, Noble Gold has an experienced staff who works hard to make life easy for you. Any paperwork that might pop up takes less than 5 minutes to complete. Maybe it's an old 401k that needs a home. Maybe you're just like me and curious about your options. If so, grab a free gold guide by visiting noblegoldinvestments.com to learn more. I respect this team and I know you will as well. Call Noble Gold right now. Tell them you heard about investing on my show. They'll find the right plan for your budget. That's noblegoldinvestments.com. noblegoldinvestments.com. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who wrote the Gulag Archipelago, for a lot of our listeners who might not be familiar with it, Archipelago, that's a mouthful, which yes, might have been the most important piece of literature that took down the Soviet Union, probably did more than anything else. It was probably more powerful than a thermonuclear weapon in actually disassembling the Soviet Union. He also had a very famous quote, which he said, "And all of this was due thanks to ideology." You know, it was a commitment to not anything that was necessarily true or rational, but a pre-existing dogmatic belief, which we see really drives the left at all costs. And that's one of the most famous quotes. And Solzhenitsyn would always argue for nuance and for speech and for the pursuit of truth. And I encourage all the time, I encourage my listeners to read the Gulag Archipelago. You think that things are tough for you now, read it. It's phenomenal. So Keith, I want to ask you, you were mentioning something this before we started our podcast, the need to get into local and state government. Why is this important? This is part of what I have published as quote unquote, calling it check the boxes. There are three boxes I tell people they need to check every day, which is you need to by name, pray for and contact your state and local government mayoral city council races. You need to support the fighters, metaphorical fighters, obviously, in our times, the people that are really getting involved in the cultural struggles and debates and all of this. And then finally, the other thing is learn something new every day. Read new books, because the best activists are the most informed activists. But let's start with the first
one. No question.
Let's start with the first one, Keith, which is local government. Why does this matter? A lot of our listeners are like, oh, I don't care about my city government. You know, I live in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. What's the difference? Tell us why it matters so much.
Charlie, let me frame this out or build this out for you. It matters so much because we are at, and I don't mean kinetically, we are at war with an ideology that seeks to destroy this nation as it stands and our freedoms. And when you are in a battle for the soul, and I would say for the republic as it stands, you can't leave any stone unturned. And if you want to understand why it's so important, I'll just give you an example. The local county judges and the local elected officials were the ones that first instituted the lockdowns. They made the decision to lock everyone down. So the damage to our local infrastructure as far as economically was done by locally elected judges.
That's so true.
Now, it wasn't and it wasn't just about who they were going to give a contract to build the road system. They made the decision who could work and who couldn't work. Because so many local judges did that then you had damage to our economic system here in the United States, but you also gave them the impetus to push mail-in voting.
That's so true.
Everywhere. And that started from a local issue. Why do you think George Soros put so much money into local district attorney races? I mean, you have a guy that doesn't even, that is concerned about global things. All of his NGOs are global.
Open Society Foundation, all of it.
Open Society Foundation, you know, you name it. They're all 6 degrees of separation from him. But what you see is local matters. And I will tell you something more important that we haven't thought about. We have to get involved locally in our local Republican clubs.
That's exactly
who
right.
is the, you know, it's not that guy that everyone laughs at anymore in charge, because that's the person who puts candidates forward locally. School boards, we've got to support each other. We're going to have to live and fight metaphorically, not kinetically. I'm totally against violence, but we're going to have to, what I always call with my employees, clean the buffalo. We can't leave anything left once we're done, meaning we have to go for the school board. We have to go for the local community college, because when you do that, you start to not, we can't go to a narrative unless we have a foundation and a base to put forward what we believe and what we say. So if we're not involved locally, we can't just jump to nationally, because locally is what shut us down in the first place.
That's exactly
right. It wasn't
a
national mandate.
And our government is different than the European project, where we are actually a local, state, federal project, where we first had the church, which then formed the city hall, which then found a local government or a county, which then founded states. The states then founded the federal government. That was the actual progression on up. The institution started with the local church. The church used to be the town square. It used to be the city council. And everything else revolved around it. The schools, the medical treatment, this idea of city and local government, the polis, the politic, it all kind of stems from this idea of those of us that what is actually happening around you. And the liberals don't like this idea because it's harder to control people when you have local government. They prefer the European
project.
It
spreads. I agree, Charlie. You hit the nail on the head. One, with the church, because the founding of this nation, what made it exceptional, and you can read the a lot of the letters from Washington and Jefferson, was the spiritual side of this nation. And it also spreads the finances. It spreads the assets of the liberals thin, because
right.
they can't fight a battle on every front. And remember, the reason they have to fight, the reason they had to go to those states, those swing states, and fight early in the courts is because they knew what they were doing was wrong. So they had to go ahead and prep what we call prep the battle space. The interesting thing about being on the side of truth is that it doesn't take a lot of work. And if you have these little truth pockets pop up everywhere, they can't combat it. They can't come in, and they have to find the right judges. They have to get laws passed that benefit them. That's how they tried to pull the election process outside of the state legislatures into the courts and through elected officials and unelected bureaucrats. Mm-hmm. And just like Solzhenitsyn said, I mean, again, since you brought him up, the great anti-communist Nobel laureate back when they gave that prize for a reason, he said that, I'm going to read it, quote, he said, the core of the crisis that we experience when you deal with totalitarianism, it's created and sustained, but it's not created and sustained politically, but spiritually. And the spiritual foundation starts in the community. It starts in the community church. It starts in the community, because people come together. Why do you think when we're trying to lock down, you could open bars, you could open casinos, you could open abortion clinics, but mm-hmm. churches, not so much. Yeah. Because the liberal ideology understands that this is a spiritual fight, it's not a political one.
Yeah.
And it's going to take something in a spiritual nature to bring the community back, and God's grace to get us where we need to be.
So, Keith, I want to ask you about something that you mentioned earlier, and you could take this any way you want to go. So I denounced the violence of the Capitol as it was happening right here in this chair, and both on Twitter and in the days to follow. Some people did not see it that way, and they got very angry. They said, no, this is the time to go to violent means. You mentioned that you do not support kinetic, which means physical violence. Is that the correct way to interpret that?
That is correct.
And so instead, we want to take peaceful yet strategic and targeted ways to try and win back the country for good. Can you unpack why you feel that way. I've done it at great length here on this program, mm-hmm. but I also just want to kind of take a time to try and tell people that the violent kind of undercurrent that certain people are calling for is not moral. It's not the right thing to do. And will actually probably have the opposite intended effect that you might desire.
It would absolutely currently have that opposite effect. In fact, I think that some of the new administration may be trying to bait people into that to allow them to take more authoritarian measures and totalitarian measures over society. And we're not in a kinetic war, Charlie, as you know, and you've said this 100 times, we're in a cultural war. And when people were coming after you and saying, wait a second, you know, at first they were trying to tie you to the violence. They tried to tie President Trump to the violence. It was interesting. I didn't hear anyone say, to my knowledge, we've had close to 100 plus MAGA rallies in the past 4 years with hundreds of thousands of people. The only violence at those rallies were Antifa and BLM attacking the people that went to the MAGA rallies. Conservatives, when they go to a rally, whether it's 20,000 or 100,000, they clean up after themselves. There's no violence. And there's great strength in our ideas. The reason the liberals have to be violent is because they don't have ideas. They can't compete in the arena of ideas. They can't compete in the arena of reality or success or experience. So what they've done, and we have to get our message across better, is they have to distract through violence. They have to, they're almost like a petulant child that says, if I don't get what I want, I'm going to burn it down. And so when we have such great ideas, we need to be peaceful and move with the weight of our idea. But we also don't need to be lazy, meaning we have to be involved on a local and state level. We have to recognize the governors, the state officials that have failed us, and then move. We have a much more powerful weapon than violence, Charlie. We have financial weapons because we are the consumer class. We are the people that can make those decisions. And what we have, and it's going to take some discipline, is, are people willing to give up some of the comforts that they enjoy right now? And I wouldn't even say it's a comfort. It's more of just like a convenience. Mm-hmm. In order to get our country back on the right track, because you're not going to change things by being violent. But where you will change things is by not patronizing people that support politicians or their companies that have turned against our former president and what I think we, the people, the Constitution. And there's great power in that. People didn't fear Martin Luther King because they thought he was going to have violent riots. And he was successful because he had nonviolent protests. And so we need to, and this country has a long history of it. We need to have nonviolent civil protests, because what scares them more than anything is an organized group of people that strategically plan at every level, from the local, state, and federal politically, from the local, state, and federal financially, from the local, state, and federal, you add onto it medically, anything else. We have to take back the pillars of our society and infuse them with what President Trump, I think we're going to look back at President Trump. History will look back at him and say he was the start again of the citizen politician. The professional politician should be a dinosaur. We need to get back to citizen politicians, people that understand what it's like to pay taxes, to employ people, to do things. I mean, you've seen the first several days of the Biden administration, and we have pain and suffering, jobs lost, industries being overthrown. Now, are we going to get our message out and talk? Are we going to organize? Or are we just going to leave that? We can't leave it to someone else now. We have a responsibility to pledge our lives, our fortune, and our sacred honor peacefully, and to start moving forward. And we start by forming groups in our local chapters. Get into your GOP, take the infrastructure of the GOP, it's ours, not theirs, and then build it out from there. You start out locally. That's how you can maybe get something like, I don't know, a convention of the states, or you can get something moving forward. I think that we have to go forward like we have never done before. Not only take back, but it's not about just getting our people back in office. It's about fixing a broken system. we've got a, I'm a physician, you know, I'm a plastic surgeon. We've got a patient that is so overweight that they say the only way they can take care of everyone is to eat more food and become bigger. And nothing gets better as it gets bigger. I think we need to decentralize government. I think we need to decentralize the corrupt power infrastructure. And then the people that are feeding that beast, whether they're lobbyists or companies, we need to identify those companies and not give them business. I mean, it's that simple.
Feel the sound playing in your head with Z-Bone's bone conduction headphones. Innovative tech and Bluetooth 5.0 connects Z-Bone's to your smartphone, tablet, laptop, or desktop computers and TVs. And the open-ear design of Z-Bone's allows you to hear clear audio from your device and maintain awareness of the environment around you. Z-Bone's comfortable pads rest in front of your ears. Audio vibrations move through your cheekbones into the inner ear. And Z-Bone's ergonomic design provide long-term wearing comfort for sweat-proof active listening. They won't fall off, and they can't fall out. Whether it's music, podcast, or streaming radio, the result is a unique audio experience with clear sound from your device while still hearing your surroundings. And the built-in mic delivers crystal clear audio for phone calls. Learn more and buy Z-Bone's at zbones.io. Zbones.io. Save at checkout with code SCALPEL70. Zbones.io. Quality sound that moves you.
There's a lot of opportunities now in front of us. The Democrats are acting as if they have a 58-seat majority in the Senate, not a 50-50 tie. They're acting as if they have a 40-seat majority in the House of Representatives. And there really is no mandate for them to govern. And they're not going to be able to get through their really, really big, you know, ambitious ideas, state additions in that. I did an entire podcast on that, really praising two Democrats, Manchin and Sinema, saying, no, we're not going to break the filibuster, which means that they're not going to be able to get those super ambitious things done. We'll see. Maybe there'll be people their word, maybe not. But at least at the moment, it's going to slow down the legislative priorities for the time being. And so I want to ask you, Keith, about the Republican Party. What kind of Republican Party should we be striving to create? What kind of Republican Party should we be demanding? What kind of Republican should we be trying to support? Are you a third party guy? Do you like the idea of a third party? I've spoken against trying to form a third party. I think strategically it would be a mistake. Help us unpack that.
A third party would be a disaster. All you have to do, again, I'm about history and experience, is yep. Look at what happened. You just can't, the numbers don't work. We're not
right.
Parliamentary system. So if you push a third party, you're and this is something that we can't do right now at this time in history. We can't move on emotions and subjective feelings. We have to start moving objectively. The reason we got to this place in the first part is that we allowed the Democrats to take over the culture based on subjective feelings, and we did not get our message objectively out of the evils of socialism and of the positive things of capitalism. And then when we didn't do that, we all were placated because we were comfortable surfing our smartphones, and we got comfortable, and we lost sight of why we're here in the first place. And so I think as a Republican Party, I'm speaking for Republican Party now. First of all, the Republican Party has an identity crisis, if you ask me, as it sits right now. I think they also have a virtue. They're anemic in virtue right now.
Yeah,
virtue and there are
deficit.
A lot of,
yeah,
a big one. That's the best way to say it. And so we the people, as we rebuild, we need to understand you can't have a third party. If you have a sports team that you love where you're from, you don't just throw the team out and you get rid of the players and you bring in better players.
New management.
We need to start looking at the people we bring in, not at their words, but at their actions. We need to look at what influences them. And we need to also, Charlie, I think right now we have, and I think Turning Point USA, one of the reasons I support you guys so much is I think you're raising the next generation leaders the right way. And there are folks out there that are my age, and I'm older, that know that God's put something on their heart that they need to step into the arena because they have something to offer. Now, it may not be comfortable for them, but I believe we have the leaders that we need for the Republican Party. We just may not know who they are yet. So we have to prepare the party to accept the leadership that's out there that's going to do something about making this nation great again. President Trump came out with headwinds that you and I have talked about. I don't see anyone getting anything done, and got so much done. Mm-hmm. Imagine what it's going to be like when you have a party behind you and everyone pulling in the same direction. So we're going to have to be the generation of accountability in the Republican Party, and that's what we've been missing.
Imagine if President Trump had the correct infrastructure around him in the White House just to be able to execute on his agenda. It's amazing, Keith, that he actually served a full term. It's amazing that his agenda was not so unbelievably thwarted by people within that he actually served an entire term. I mean that non-sarcastically, because...
No, Charlie, it's a miracle.
No, seriously, because there were people every step of the way that wanted him gone in the first 100 days, first year, and he served an entire term. And that might seem inconsequential, but there is long-lasting parts of his legacy that now Biden is going to have difficulty unpacking. You know, probably the ones that are going to be the most, how do I word this, that will have the most damage to our country's immigration. The immigration stuff's going to be tough that Biden's doing immediately. But from foreign policy to some of this other stuff, judges, Biden's going to struggle with it. He really will. And there'll be some, there's a lot of pressure points. I mean, now we got men that can go in women's locker rooms and all this other nonsense that eventually can be reversed and scaled back. But President Trump did a lot for our country, and he did a lot despite all of the opposition. And so Keith, for people that are saying out there, they email us in great number, I want a better Republican Party. Who are the good guys? Who are some of the people that are willing to support Keith? What are some of the steps that people can take to reclaim their party?
Well, Charlie, I'm glad you asked me that, because I worked with a couple guys throughout the Christmas and New Year's break that I will tell you were trench fighters. These guys, you know my background, you know I don't throw out compliments a lot, and I'm not real impressed with what I call the ruling class. Scott Perry is a man of honor. Scott Perry is a tireless worker who, Scott and I were up around Christmas till midnight working on getting to President Trump, getting him the help that he needed. You say the president, one of his mistakes, and he didn't know because he was served so poorly, is he didn't have control of personnel. And the most important thing, I think, if President Trump gets back in the Oval Office, is the Office of Personnel Management is critical. The liberals, the progressives, always go after human resources. Where did Stroke go when they demoted him? They put him as the head of HR. He was hiring folks into the bureau, and they know that. So we have to get good people around our leaders to support them. So I think that's critical. But you had Jim Jordan and Scott Perry were two guys that I saw firsthand doing work. And I, before I came on, I got a call from my congressman's office, and I'm not going to tell you who my congressman is, who I supported a lot, and he's a good man. But unfortunately, I believe my congressman and a lot like him, they didn't do anything to hurt the president, but to me, they didn't do anything to help him. They did not stand in the gap for our president when he was right. They did not use the levers that the Constitution gives us to have a chance to be successful. And if I had one more congressman tell me, I see there was fraud, but can we prove it? I'll pull my hair out. I mean, I saw a lot more than most, and they didn't have the fight, and they don't know. And I don't know if they didn't have it because they didn't want to, or do they not even know how. To me, my strategy would have been, if you're not getting the news, can you imagine what would happen if all the Republican lawmakers got together, agreed on a strategy, and then went back for 5 days to their districts and had nothing but town hall meetings? And people would come from all over and then open them up to the Democrats too and say, look, we're coming back to the people. We have a national crisis. And they reversed Paul Revere'd it to their constituents. Can you imagine how that would have motivated people, what that would have looked like? The American people are struggling right now because they're discouraged and they're being demoralized, like we talked about with Yuri Bezmenov. They not only lost an election, but they saw people not fight and they expected more. And I think that the fight is important. You may not win every battle, but you fight fair, but you do fight.
So I want to ask you about one of the issues here. And I think you and I see this the same way, is that some people have seen all of the valid concerns of, I'm just going to call it shenanigans, if you know what I mean, around the election.
Sure. There were questions.
Yeah, let's put it that way. However, some people are now taking those questions as a reason never to vote again and never to get involved again. And Keith, I'm telling you, this is growing where now people are translating into apathetic political, viewers than active. Can you say, as someone who has been raising those questions and was pushing hard, why that's the wrong way to handle this?
If you're having those feelings, congratulations. Whoever is running this big information operation is winning, and you are falling right into that's the trap, right? Because you're not only having those feelings because you're having them. This was designed to give you those feelings. That's what they want. That's what people that are against freedom want. They don't want to beat you. That's not enough. They have to discourage a movement. They have to demoralize you to the point of apathy. They want you to say, it can't get any better. And I'll, can you imagine our troops on D-Day? I mean, what they went through as they stormed Normandy? If they just said, we're not going to win, we're not even going to get out of the boat, you have to stay in the fight. And that's why, Charlie, I say it spiritually. There's got to be something inside of you down deep to fight. And I would tell you, our founding fathers, the reason there's no reason in the history of the world that we should have won the Revolutionary War. None. It didn't make any sense. And I've been doing some research on that. I mean, and what was truly remarkable about that was that how much was working against George Washington during the entire Revolutionary War. You talk about Trump had it bad for 4 years. During the war with the most powerful nation in the world, everything went wrong. And the Redcoats were hardened. They were well-disciplined. And Washington, the best word I can describe his soldiers were ragtag. And we've talked about this. Mm-hmm. But they didn't quit. And they didn't quit because they were excited about getting a country with dirt under their feet. They fought for something. They didn't fight the British because they hated the British. They fought so hard because they loved freedom. They fought for the ideal of being free because they knew what it looked like not to be free. And so we have to sit back and think, what are we fighting for? You know, the colonists, if you read anything, where they were divided over the war. 50% of the colonists were not even sure they really wanted that. So how do patriots prevail against great odds? And the answer lies in the strength of their commitment. George Washington, in his inaugural address, and since we just had an inauguration, in the city that's named after General Washington, in his inaugural address, he said, we ought to be no less persuaded that the propitious smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right, which heaven itself had ordained. And what he was saying was the reason we won the miracle is because we knew who it came from. It came from God. And they had that spiritual thing inside of them, whatever that looks like to you, where they loved freedom and they were willing to do everything for it. Because these were young guys. These weren't a bunch of old guys at the end of their life. They were young men when they fought, the majority of them. And so I would tell everyone that I get the disappointment. I get the fact that people that we petitioned, people that we worked hard for, we fought to get people in office. I gave a lot of money to a lot of different people. I did everything in my power up until the inauguration to help this country. And I've given a lot of my life to fight for this country. And I will tell you, you don't do it because of I hated the bad guys or I hate the Democrats. I do it because I love freedom. So I would tell everyone to make a decision inside themselves. They need to look at themselves in the mirror. I look at my children. I look at my wife. You know, my wife is from Mexico, and she grew up in Mexico. She came over when she was 19, and she understands what it's like not to live in a country with the same freedoms that we have here. And so I would tell everyone, we have to live unhindered, uncompromised, and unbound in our determination to go after freedom. And we've got to start, and there's no detail too small. There's no battle too light that we don't need to fight it. And if we do this as 74, 80 million people, we'll have an awakening in this nation. And I'll tell you what, you know why I know it'll be successful? Because the tech tyrants are deplatforming everyone on Twitter that's conservative. They're taking everyone's followers. Why are they doing that? If they're going to be successful, they make money by keeping people on Twitter. Why are they willing to lose money? Because they know we can be successful. Why are they banishing President Trump from all forms of communication? Because they know we can be successful. Why are they a cancel culture where they will literally take someone's job for his political beliefs? Because they know his political beliefs are so strong that it will tear apart the foundation of lies that has propped up socialism for eternity. And they know that it can happen because there's 80 million of us that believe in freedom. It's that simple.
Well said. Well, Keith, thank you for joining us, and thank you for that wonderful message. The Scalpel with Keith Rose.
I mean to like sell it. Yeah, I think we can win. I think you can build out, Charlie. Use that big brain of yours to how on the local and state levels. But there's a lot of people that need to be positioned to do that. And
amen.
I hope people keep supporting you, man, because your podcast should be number one. If I was Joe Rogan, I'd be sweating.
Well, we're climbing.
Keep it going, brother.
We're number four today right now in news, right? We're number eight overall. So we were number one conservative podcast yesterday, right behind the New York Times and NPR. I think we're two today. So we're up there, Keith. You know, we're in the fight. We're in the game, which is good. But any closing thoughts, Keith, for our audience? You know, you're someone that has really been in this struggle for quite some time, and it really is a struggle of good versus evil. Any closing thoughts?
I would tell folks that remember, everyone's watching us. The entire world is watching us. I have friends all over the world, and my friends that I'm close to all want the success of this nation, because as one guy told me from Pakistan, he said, look, you're the only place we get to go to be free. And he was like, you guys can't fall apart.
Yeah, amen.
But on a serious note, we have a Department of Justice, a Federal Bureau of Investigation, that spent a majority of time that we now know for political reasons going after our president. We have a country where the people that should be protecting us from foreign threats and from criminality and be protecting the United States of America have been spending our money with their time to usurp, you know, certain things in this country for political reason. And that should make everyone stand up and pay attention that we can't leave any part of the buffalo unclean. And that goes for national, you know, Federal Bureau of Investigation, the CIA. We have to get our house in order, because currently we're a house divided. And a house divided can't stand. So we need to have a sobering time of recognizing how tough this is going to be. And then what did Thomas Paine said? The more glorious, the harder the challenge, the more glorious the triumph. I mean, are we still true Americans? I think we are. I think we can get after it. But it's going to take groups like yours organizing and speaking the truth, Charlie. Don't ever let them. You never do. You've stood for it since day one. And people don't probably realize how young you are, but I do. And I mean, I respect you more than you know. So don't stop doing what you're doing. And there are a lot of guys like me that are a little bit older that spent a lot of time working for this country that are out there that will come back in and work again to try to help make it great. And we need to identify those guys and learn from them. And then I would tell you, I pray that President Trump, as he decides what he's going to do, I would like to make a recommendation. I know he came out with the office of the former president of the United States, but I think he should make his platform the office of the future president, of the United States. And don't be shy. Don't back down. Stand on truth and have courage. And then, sir, we'll get you some better people around you. And we can get after it. So I pray President Trump does that. I think it's great. We need an office of the future president. He can make announcements every day. You know, liberal heads will explode. It'll be kind of fun.
I love it. Keith, God bless you, man. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks for all you do for our country. We'll talk soon.
Protest line, freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times, standing on the edge of a revolution. Hey, hey, just obey your secret safe with the NSA. In God we trust, or the CIA, standing on the edge of a revolution.
With Dr. Keith Rose.
The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr at scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.